super excited to be able to introduce you all to two people that I spend a lot of time with, that I get to create with. And first up is Yehuda. Yehuda is an intimacy coordinator for film, TV, and live performance. They began their practice of intimacy work in the live arts in 2007 in New York's vibrant performance scene. Yehuda is a SAG-AFTRA accredited intimacy coordinator trainer and co-runs Sentima with Jiminika and Jacqueline, a pioneering training program tailored for marginalized identities entering the field. They've worked across the major networks, including HBO, Netflix, CBS, Apple TV, and more. And y'all also get to meet the other portion, the other third of Sentima, and that is Jacqueline. She is a co-founder of the SAG-AFTRA Accredited Intimacy Coordinator Training Organization, Sentima. She is the true multi-hyphenate and has been working in the entertainment industry for over 10 years. After earning her BFA in acting from the University of Cincinnati's College Conservative of Music, she has worked in production, directing, casting, and acting. This body of work inspired Jacqueline to become, well, more so to begin her work in intimacy coordinating, filling her toolbox with experiences and skills from which to draw as she approaches this important work with actors. Ladies, gentlemen, theys, nims, dims, and zims, I present to you Sentima. Hello, everyone. I'm super excited to have these two lovely humans. You've already met them, but now I love to ask my guests, who are you? Because I think everyone explains who they are in a different way. And I think it's super important for folks to kind of get a connection with you on like how you vibe yourself. So I'm going to start with Jacqueline. Who are you?
The first thing that came to mind was I'm a Gemini.
Well, stars. We are stars.
I think that that actually covers a lot of it. Like I am always learning something, evolving. I kind of morph into different versions of myself around different people. And I kind of imagine there's just like plenty more potential energy to grow into, you know?
That's what I am. Yehuda, who are you?
Well, I'm Yehuda. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm an Aquarius. And I just had my birthday.
It sounds like a dating app. Birthday. Okay.
Well, I'm an intimacy coordinator, and I have a long history in the world of performance. I started my performance work in New York in the late 90s, and around 2007, I was directing a play that had some like really intense sexual content and worked with the actors in this way that was just very respectful of boundaries and developed some consent practices with them. And people noticed that these intimate scenes, these very intense sex scenes in the show were handled nicely and it was really effective. And so then people asked me how that happened and how I did that. And that just kind of began to evolve into what I do now, which is work as an intimacy coordinator. And I have other lives too. I have other lives. I'm a commercial director. I was a Disney Imagineer for a while.
So I have a question. Is that who you are or is that what you do?
Okay. So who am I? Mm-hmm. Oh, Jiminika.
That was the question,
this
sir.
It's like an ever evolving quest. Who am I?
Well, who are you today?
Today, I'm a person who tries to feel as much as possible. Mm. I'm okay. A feeler. That's who I am.
Okay. Chris, cut that to where Yehuda talks about who they are. So I normally ask folks how we met, and this is going to vary. Feel free to, as we go through this conversation and connection today, feel free to just jump in and out. We'll mix it up. But how did we meet?
Well, you two met before I came into the trio. So I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that because I don't actually know how you met. I think you were introduced, maybe.
Yeah, Jim and I were, Jim and Ika and I were introduced to a mutual professional friend acquaintance, and began working together, instructing intimacy coordinators. In 2020, that was a while ago.
Yeah. It was quite some time ago. So we met because someone else needed to jump in that is not an IC to like create this company that doesn't exist. You know, we got good things from it, but we have moved forward and now we are here, which is this conversation is called The Trauma Within Film. And I thought this conversation was really important. One, to tell everyone about this magical company that we have, our child. Our little baby, but also because I think it's a really big thing that's happening in the world in a big new position that I don't think a lot of people actually understand. And so I wanted to have this conversation with y'all and to really get into it. What does trauma mean to you?
Can I start?
This it's not a hand raise. This is a conversation. Y'all go.
Hi. Trauma to me is seemingly something that most people contend with in some way. It's inside of us in some way. I think even just the nature of how we were born is slightly, there's like, you know, even just sort of trauma in our existence in this world. Obviously, there's different types of traumas. Things happen to people, and those create traumatic experiences and traumatic events. And the way that humans treat each other can be traumatic in some mm-hmm. ways. And so it's interesting. I think that trauma is this, like, the way that it manifests in our current lives is just this thing that we're always trying to soothe and to undo and to let go of, and to mm-hmm. accept and to welcome, just to say, hey, this is here. This is part of who I am in this particular moment. And I think that there's like a relative sense of experience. Like we've all experienced something, some people worse than others, but there is no worse. It's just sort of what happened to you. And it's something that we deal with all the time. And so it's this, it's like this learning tool in a way. It's like, how can you be more present? How can you release more? How can you accept who you are and the conditions around you? I don't know. I'm kind of babbling now about rambling, but it's a complicated question, but I think it's something that we all deal with and that we all, mm-hmm. that we all come in contact with. And it's, something that is really worth sitting with and investigating.
Yeah. When we think about what intimacy coordination works looks like, I think about trauma. I think this work exists because trauma has happened. What is an intimacy coordinator? I feel like people just think it's like the sex police, which I know we all hear often, but what to you, like, what did you think an intimacy coordinator was before Jacqueline? And then Yehuda, how did you get here to now have this title? Because I know you had a different title for this work that you were doing.
The question is, for me, what did I think an intimacy coordinator was? Mm-hmm. I think I knew what it was when I learned what it was. I had heard an interview with an intimacy coordinator, and the context of the interview was like an explanation of what they are and what they do. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that when I heard that podcast, I was instantly like sold, but it kind of stuck with me for a few months until there was like something that happened with me in my personal life that kind of sparked the memory, and I reinvestigated that podcast and started to follow up with ways that I could incorporate it into my own life. I don't think that, like, listening to you two speak, obviously the position was sort of in many ways born out of trauma. There was like a need in that sense, but I don't think that that's necessarily the thing that drew me to the work. But I do think that it's something that I ended up being able to handle pretty well. For me, the answer to the question of like, what is trauma, is that it's this physiological, mental, emotional manifestation of a response to something that our body has done in order to keep us safe from something. And so Yehuda's answer of like, it just is different for everybody, but there's no measuring it. It's just how it showed up for you is a very aligned explanation, like how I feel about it. And in terms of this work, I think I just have been able to manage my own well, and that has served me in doing the work. That answered the question.
No. Ready? Okay, Yehuda, how did you get to become an intimacy coordinator?
Well, it all started back in the performance world of New York City in 2007. And I was directing a show by a playwright named Thomas Bradshaw. And there was some really extreme scenes in this show. And everyone was really excited to work with Tom. He's an incredible playwright. But the actors are like, how are we going to do these scenes as they're written? And I didn't know. And I was very transparent about that. I said, I don't know. But what I do know is that I'm not going to surprise you with anything. Mm-hmm. Because I had had some, and I think a lot of actors have, because I was an actor for some time, had some uncomfortable situations on stage with people in intimate situations, sex scenes. And also had lots of friends who have been like, that was the, I don't want to go to this show. I don't want to be in that. I don't want to be with these people on stage. And so it was clearly a very sensitive topic and sensitive subject. And so I didn't know how to approach it. I had some ideas, but I did know that I didn't want to surprise anyone. So I was like, listen, we're going to do a lot of work on the rest of the play for the next 2 weeks. It was a 4-week rehearsal process. And in 2 weeks on this particular day, this is when we're going to start working on it. And we're just going to start with the script and table work so that we just sit and we're going to talk through everything and go slow. And so through this, it's a long story, but through this process, I just started developing a system of how to work with actors and how to create a consent-based practice. And this was, you know, this was in 2007. It was a while ago. And so it was, I think, kind of early in this field. And at the time, there wasn't a name for it. I was the director of the show and trying to sensitively approach this subject matter with these performers. But afterwards, people were like, how did you do that? And will you do that for me? And so I started calling it sex choreography because, like, you know, in a show, we would have a fight choreographer come in to, you know, if you had to slap someone on stage, you had to like hire a whole separate person to come in and they teach you how to like slap someone on stage, for example. But if it was like some very intense, you know, a traumatic, non-consensual scene that we were staging, it was just kind of up to the director and the stage manager and the actors to just like figure out how to do it. So I started calling it sex choreography because that's kind of what made sense at the time. And it definitely wasn't the only thing I was doing, but people would call me in from time to time to do that. And that led to a film and led to a podcast. And, you know, 2017, 18 with, you know, the resurgence of the Me Too movement and, you know, Alicia Rodas being the first intimacy coordinator with that title on HBO. And then suddenly it became, you know, that the term intimacy coordinator was born. And that became an actual thing. And it was just sort of this interesting thing that I did for a while for people. And then it turned into a very important facet of film production that really cares for performers and casting, you know, cast and crew in a way that wasn't really on people's radar that people needed to be cared for in that particular way. I think that there was an assumption that, like, well, everyone has sex, and so everyone just knows how to deal with it, and that's clearly not true, particularly with the power dynamics of performance and creation and art making and all of that stuff. So that's the long answer of how I got into it. And so it was a practice born out of necessity that then became a thing.
Yeah, I love that. I also love that. I don't think I knew that you were an actor. So I'm like, huh, new facts. This is the goal of the show for me, because I'm nosy, as we all know. And so it's like learning about the people in my life, at least this first season. And so I'm like, ooh, fun facts. As like listening to both of you like talk about this, you have been doing this work for some time now. I know, Jacqueline, you haven't been doing it as long as Yehuda, but you've been out there. Y'all have been doing some really cool and amazing things. Why a company, though? Right? Like, you can do this without. So we have this amazing company called Centima, which I'm super excited. This is where we're going. We're going to get all into our own business. But like, why would you want to do this? Right? Like, this is not easy. Having a business, as we know together, is not easy. So why would you want to create an intimacy coordination company if there are companies that already exist?
I don't think, to be like 100% frank, I don't think that any of us anticipated the amount of work that has gone into it being like, what, like, I don't think we planned for this.
This is not it. No.
We had some, you too had some assets, and in order to salvage what was left of a previous company, thought, how do we do this in a way that's like, and I think you had the idea of like, oh, I don't really want to give this up. And maybe if we put it online, it's a way that can be sort of like almost convenient for us and accessible for other people. And all of the work that had been put into the business up to that point would not have been for naught. And in having this conversation with me, he was like, is that something that you'd be interested in like helping out with? And I was like, yeah, why not? And very quickly after that,
sat in that living room,
a much, much bigger project than just like throwing it online, and probably for many reasons. And then, you know, then I just became attached. So,
you know, it did start with a few walks, maybe a little bit of elevation on walks and conversations to get here. And it's been so interesting to show up and be here. What is Centima? Like, what is that name? Also, it's Centima, not Centima, not cinnamon roll. It is Centima.
Centima.
Where is Centima from?
We were looking for a name, the three of us. Like, what is our name going to be? And, you know, I started just writing down, like, I wish I had it to pull up. I have like maybe 500 words on a piece of paper.
It's true.
cinematic, artist, intimacy, like so many things. And so in that, I started just like cutting up words and combining them. And Cintima is a combination of cinematic intimacy artists. That's what Cintima stands for. And there were other contenders as well. I don't remember them right now, but there was like three or four other contenders as well. But when I kept looking at Cintima, I'm like, something about Cintima just kind of rings proper for me. Yeah. And so that's how that name was born. And then the why, you know, the why keeps evolving for me. And something, you know, I do a lot of our editing for our courses. And something that we wanted to do is to make these courses accessible to people online. So that, number one, the burden of teaching in person for Jiminika and I was high. Like, you know, having 2-3 hour classes twice a week, you know, like 2 times a week, a 3 hour class every week for 15 weeks. Like that's a burden on a schedule, especially like, you know, for, you know, I work in the film industry and they're like, we need you at rehearsal or we need you on set, the day shift. And so it's very complicated to make that time. And it's complicated for students as well. Like it's a huge time commitment. And so we felt like, well, let's make it accessible in a different way. There needs to be a live component because we need to be with the people that we're, you know, we need to understand who they are and we need to have dialogue. But a lot of the information can be pre-recorded. And so that was sort of this idea of like, well, now hold on a second. If we pre-record everything, it could free us up for all the other shit.
I'm just laughing.
I'm laughing. Like, freeware.
So funny because Yehuda's like,
I'm so free.
The burden of 3 hours twice a week. Let's just make it 15 a day instead.
Yeah. Now it's like, now we have
There's
15 hour
days.
There's
nothing burdensome about 15 hours a day.
Yeah. It's definitely like we've front loaded so much of the work in recording everything. And, you know, to go back to the why, as I would, you know, we have a lot of really amazing guest instructors with us. We've got, you know, we've got Dr. Grant doing diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. We've got Ellen Scott doing the history of intimacy and queer intimacy and, you know, in cinema, Sunny Megatron talking about kink and BDSM and sexuality, like, you know, Francis Reed talking about gender, Sean Horn, like we have so many beautiful, incredible guest instructors teaching about all of the adjacent things that you need to have sort of in your toolkit to be an intimacy coordinator. And this sort of why keeps evolving for me, like these skills that we're teaching are really life skills. Like there's just something that socially we need right now. Like we need, you know, like we're teaching cultural sensitivity, you know, just compassion for other people, awareness of other lifestyles, other sexual modalities, you know, like all of the things that we teach are, I think, really critical life skills, especially where we are socially right now, which is a really complicated space that we're in right now in life. And so the accessibility is a huge part of our course. And then also the types of skills that we think just should be mandatory with learning the art and, you know, practice of intimacy coordination. Also, part of our mission is to train people with marginalized identities. And, you know, when you have an intimacy coordinator on set that is representative of the identities that are being filmed, that creates a much different dynamic that is, you know, it's just more real. It creates just a different sense of realness.
I think what also comes up for me is continuously thinking about like the title of this episode, the trauma within film. Like this doesn't exist without shitty things happening, right? Like this exists because of that. And I think when sitting down and like figuring out what this program, what this expansion of self and all these things looks like and creating it, that for me, I think, was on the forefront, like speaking to, we want to make sure that people, it makes me think of like the comment we always use in sex ed is like, you want to leave the campsite better than you found it. And so I think for me, that feels like a big goal with Centima is like, yes, we attract a specific type of individual, but also we're going to allow you and support you to be an even better person, to be on these sets, to continue like changing the culture and all of that. But it's kind of not always easy. Can y'all talk about like what it's actually like being on a set, being an intimacy coordinator? Because it's not all cute. I read the articles and I am not an intimacy coordinator. Let me remind folks of that out the gate. I am not. These lovely humans are, and they let me play with them. So, but tell me what it's like on sets.
You want to take it, Jacqueline?
I mean, it depends on the set. Like, and there is, like, I'm trying, there was something that you said of like, there's like, it's always traumatic or something like that. And while that can be true, this is like, it's like we don't, the separation between the actor who's playing these roles and then the actual content that they are, that they're like bringing to life from the piece of paper yeah. are two different things to consider when you're on the set. And those are like two very different parts of the work. Like at the very beginning, we're talking about who this person is, what their experience has been, what they need from us, how we know when they need it from us. Like all of these, we're just researching basically, like we're trying to understand who this person is. And actually in explaining that just now, I'm realizing like, I don't even think I'm just realizing it, but that there really is like a sense of intimacy between the intimacy coordinator and the people that we're working with. And it's not just Absolutely. The actors. It's like, yeah. you know, there's so many people who are uncomfortable saying the word sex, let alone having to like write it down and talk about it being in a script and talking about it being on a call sheet. Like we really do have to hold space for a lot of people to contend with things that they don't normally, that they have the option of sort of ignoring in their everyday life. So in terms of like, you know, what it's like on set, it really depends on the people who are making up that set. And I think actually that's kind of the hardest thing to make students understand is that you're going to have a million questions. You're going to have to get good at answering them in real time. And I think that speaks a lot to what Yehuda's talking about in terms of like where our world is socially. We're teaching skills of like, we're so disconnected as people. How do we like be okay connecting, and like how do we do it in a constructive way, holding space for yeah. people in a non-judgmental way?
I agree with that. And to just further, like, what is it like on set? It's all sorts of different ways, but I will say that a majority of the time, my experience on set anyway, is someone is like, oh my God, thank God you're here. You just made the most awkward thing be so fun and comfortable. And you know, that's nice. It's my favorite compliment that I love to hear. And, you know, in terms of the, like the trauma piece of it, it's almost like we can come in and hold the trauma so that other people can let it go. And so we just like acknowledge it, you know, it's like, listen,
that's beautiful.
To bring some stuff up for you. But I'm here, like I'm listening, like we're here to like hold that for you. And if something comes up, I'm here, I'm going to step in. So tell me what you're comfortable with. They're comfortable with X, Y, and Z. I'm like, great, that's all we're going to do. And so you now can mm-hmm. do X, Y, and Z to the fullest capacity of what you can do. And is not going to go beyond that because we've had this discussion. And I can now hold all of that other stuff so that you can go off and do your thing. And it's actually can be really liberating. Like these, you know, doing these intimate scenes, like performing them can actually be really fun and really liberating. And feel good when you have the proper like boundary and container around it. So I think that we're also there to kind of like absorb and hold all of that stuff for other people so that they can just put it down. And then we give it back.
Take it with you. Take your luggage.
Yeah.
So what is, you know, when I read articles sometimes, we were kind of talking about this in the beginning, is like some folks look at intimacy coordinators as like disruptors, but not in a fun way, or the sex police. What, how do I say this? What is not intimacy? Like, that's not how I say that. What is not an intimacy coordinator role that people assume is your role? That's how I'll say that.
Well, first of all, let's just like acknowledge that this is a very new position. And so for whatever reasons, we've gotten whatever bad names that we have gotten, or negative light has been because up until now has sort of been in development by people who have been doing this work, sometimes not having done it before or having protocols for it. Like this is just very new. So people are doing it or have been doing it without necessarily knowing what they're getting themselves into all the time. And so just like some grace for that part, first of all, is what I would like to send out because
out the gate,
out the gate, because, you know, like I think that in general, it's becoming more developed, more protocols and more accepted now that there is an understanding of what to expect from an intimacy coordinator. I think that for so many people who have been working on set for their whole careers, to all of a sudden, in their perspective, all of a sudden be, whether you're in the production side in some other department, whether you're an actor, it doesn't matter. If you're like used to it being one way, there is, you know, there's some shock whenever like this new thing is thrown into the mix and you're told like, now you have to pay attention to what this person says. And there's there's more time, there's more money being spent on this new element of production. And so I think that that honestly, like resistance to change and, you know, like sometimes the bureaucracy that comes with onboarding and getting people to work together, getting put on an email list and like not really knowing, like all of those things, I think are probably more to do with why there has been a bad name more than like the actual work that has been done. And, you know, there is some percentage of work that has been done that hasn't been thorough or has been done without integrity or without, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Education.
Yeah. Education or even just consideration. Yeah. Training. Mm. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think as a whole, the group of people who are seasoned intimacy coordinators at this point are sort of making up for that bad representation. But to answer your question directly, like probably HR is a title that we get that like is not actually our job, or like that the intimacy police or like whatever people want to call us. Honestly, like, intimacy coach, like we're not coaches. There's a few titles that are not actually our title.
Yeah, something that I think, you know, I and a lot of intimacy coordinators want the world of production to know is that we want your sex scenes to be fucking amazing. Like we want them to be incredible. The same way that you would get an incredible fight director or stunt choreographer to make your shit look real and make it look good and also have it be safe so no one's like, you know, getting hurt. Like, mm-hmm. that's why we're there. That's what we do. And so, you know, I find that, like, you know, productions aren't always ready for, like, this new expense around, like, it was just like, okay, we'll do the sex scene. It's just like any other scene, or we'll do the intimate scene or whatever it is. It's just like any other scene. And now it just requires a little bit more sensitivity and a little bit more planning. It's a new department. There's new rules around how you can shoot those. There's rules around how much notice you have to give the actors before you shoot those scenes. You know, a writer needs to be in an actor's hand 48 hours before the scene shoots. And if there's any changes to the script, you need to wait 48 hours. So this protects an actor from, like, a producer walking on set and being like, it's not hot enough, take your underwear off. And the actor being like, okay, if I don't do that, I'm going to lose my job. And that's mm-hmm. not a fair dynamic or position for someone to be in at work. And so with this planning, what we can do is make the scenes incredible. And with a skilled intimacy coordinator who's really, you know, holding people's comfort level, understanding the vision of the production and the director, the showrunner, understanding what the actors are comfortable with, we can really come to an incredible, so many ways to shoot something. We can really, you know, come to an incredible way to tell the story and have it be, you know, the most powerful thing that it can be, or whatever the scene needs to be, we can help it make that way, make it that way. So yeah, you know, we're not HR, we're not the sex police. I hear a lot of directors like, listen, I don't want anybody doing anything that they're not comfortable with. And also, like, once or twice I felt like the director is maybe almost even embarrassed to say what it is that they want, because they don't want to be seen by us, like the sex police, as like pervy or something like that. I'm like, yo, we are so down for whatever it is that you want to do. Just tell us what your vision is. And, mm-hmm. you know, we are, I feel like when it comes to actual sexuality, we're so non-judgmental. Like, we're so open to all of the different formats and spectrum of what sexuality is and can be. And it's really exciting to explore that and to, you know, bring that to storytelling.
Mm-hmm. I would also say there is a perception that in general that, like, we are limiting. And number one, I don't think that's true. But number two, I do think that within the limitations of whatever boundaries we're setting, mm-hmm. that, like, there is a lot of creativity. And I don't think that people, like, I think sometimes egos are too much in the way to see, like, how much we can actually play within those limitations, and mm-hmm. and also, like, undermining the imagination of your audience is something that, like, if you could just understand that, like, one thing that productions can understand is, like, the richness of an audience imagination is so much more exciting than anything they could actually see. Mm-hmm. And so to, like, just play within the limitations instead of seeing them as limitations, just, like, seeing them as an opportunity for creativity, would just be such a more rich collaborative experience.
When are you actually called on set? Like, it's not just for the sexy things. Like, what have you been called to do? Like, what do ICs do? Like, what kind of scenes, what kind of work, what is your purpose? What's your vibes, as the kids say, vibes?
I've been called for, like, just, you know, a kissing scene. But, like, and when they got there, I was like, okay, I'm, like, reading the script. I'm like, okay, it says they kiss. And then the kiss was like, see you later, honey. It was like a goodbye, like, kiss on the lips. I was like, all right, I'm here for that. You're comfortable with what's happening? Need some gum or a mint or a Listerine strip? Great. And, you know, sometimes people are like, you know, don't exactly need you here for that, but, you know, we're here for it anyway, just in case. And then have been called in for, like, you know, very intense, non-consensual, intimate scene that's happening during a murder, you know, like, you know, very intense stuff as well. So it's really a huge spectrum from, you know, very kind of surface intimacy, or I don't know, I don't know the right word to describe that, but just like very pedestrian, like an intimate, you know, like a peck on the lips goodbye in a scene, to something much more intense than that. So I think that, you know, as these new, you know, through the strikes, SAG was able to put a provision in the contract saying that in good faith, productions must use an intimacy coordinator, in good faith. So in good faith is being defined. And then what's the filter for what intimacy is? Is it like, you know, in our course, we give this example. It's like, you know, two people sitting across the table who have had an affair, who are giving each other like eyes. They're like eye fucking each other. You don't need an intimacy coordinator for that. That's acting. Like, you know, we don't need to be consulted for a moment like that. We could be certainly happy to talk about it. But that's acting. Like, that's what actors do. They perform. But if in that same scene with giving eyes across the table at the dinner table, if a foot is being slid up someone's leg and now like pressing into their crotch, like now there's contact and it's crossing a certain threshold, that we would then be involved in that. And so I think the filters for when we're needed are still being defined. And I find a lot of times productions are just being safe and just bringing us on. Like, let's just have you there. And it's great. It can be great fun.
Yeah. There are reasons. There are specific, like, if there's something that needs to be put in a contract, then, you know, you have to have an IC. But then there are just like actors who want one, and then there has to be an IC. It just kind of depends.
Do you think now that SAG is, you know, it's documented that you're supposed to have ICs, do you think that's going to change the actual usage? Do you think people are going to be more welcoming and accepting and calling for them? You know, sometimes people put laws and structures in place and there's people that are like, I still don't want it. Do you think this is actually going to be a movement of expansion for intimacy coordinators?
I don't think that's something that we are able to put into a category in that way. It truly is like being on set is a collaboration of personalities and egos, and it doesn't matter what title the person has. It's like if you're on a set where people have, because like it's also an industry of like being hired by people who have hired you before and by people who know you. So it's really like what kind of environment, culture is this set that you're walking onto? And is it generally a collaborative space, a welcoming space? Then yes, they're going to be welcoming. Is it a space where there are egos and people who wouldn't want to work with you no matter what your position was because they don't like you? They're going to find a reason not to like you. And it's that they're also doing that with other roles. They're not just doing that with an intimacy coordinator. And so I think the difference is that like our position on those sets are different, because if you're in a collaborative space where people are working together and solving problems and not being problems or creating them, you're going to be able to do your job well. and you probably, there other things won't come up where you're going to have to like hold that, that advocacy space for people. When you're on a set where people don't want to work with you and they're making it difficult, they're kind of just making it difficult for themselves, because we are advocates and we will make the space for the people who need it.
I think that I do think that this is just going to grow. When I work with younger filmmakers, it's just like, oh yeah, of course. When I work with older filmmakers, some of them are like, grumble, grumble. Others are like, wow, we've never had you before. This is amazing. Where have you been this whole time? So, you know, there's a real spectrum of responses and reactions. However, I think that, you know, with these new SAG-AFTRA provisions and, you know, with the increasing level of sensitivity that people want to treat each other with, it seems to me, it feels to me, that this will, you know, continue to grow and be a very accepted thing. My hope is that, you know, you don't need, I don't know if I want to say that, but my hope is that sex scenes aren't written out of scripts for budget reasons, because like, oh, it's too much work now. And like, you can't, the intimacy.
I didn't think about that.
It's just like, well, you know, so my hope is that the storytelling goes further. I personally think that there's such revelation of character and like how, you know, like you see a person, how they are in their everyday life, and then you see how they are intimately. And those are so different. Like, that's such a fascinating character revelation. You know, and I think that's true of everyone. Like, anyone who you see on the street is probably looks much different when they have their sex face on.
I do.
Yeah, you know that.
That's true.
Yeah. And so I think there's such like a richness of storytelling to be had in this field, which is what really attracted me to it in to begin with. And also, there's something that's so liberating when you can feel comfortable with this material and sexuality. Like, it's really liberating. Like, it's something that, I mean, intimacy is like, it's our birthright. Like, we are conceived through the most intimate acts that we can imagine. We're born through the most intimate parts of our body. We're wired to like crawl up our parents' chest and like find their chest and like feed off of their body. Like, this, we're wired for intimacy. It's like part of us. And it's also this thing that like is so fraught for a lot of human beings, and like the trauma around it and the rates of like, you know, history of sexual, like 1 in 2 people in the on the globe have had some kind of like, you know, bad sexual experience or like, you know, assault or whatever it is. And so this intimacy that we're born with, that we need so badly, is also something that's so fraught for us culturally and socially. And so there's something very beautiful and satisfying about like holding space for people so they then feel comfortable with something that is just so innate to who we are as humans.
Also,
yeah,
nice.
The shows, like, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention lately to like the shows that are on networks and studios that have historically been the places where there's like the most exposure, like HBO and Showtime and Stars. Like, that's where you would watch like nudity and explicit sex scenes happening. And actually, the shows that are on now that have intimacy coordinators on them there's way less exposure. And like, that doesn't mean that there's not sex, like there's still sex scenes, but they're not done to the extent that they have been done in the past. Like, there's two that I'm thinking of at this moment that like, if they were shot probably like 5, 10, 15 years ago, there would have been like breasts and butts and like different different angles and things like that. And I'm thinking of True Detective, which is on HBO, which, like, no boobs, but really good sex scenes. Sex scenes that I watched twice.
Oh.
Like, how did they
went back.
It's my job now, so I can't.
Excuse me, write it off on your taxes. You're right. It's your job now. What have been the ups and the downs for both of you personally doing this work? Because I think for me, wanting to have this conversation, one is to gloat and we'll really get into the company so y'all really check us out, but also to humanize like us as individuals. Like, what have been your up and downs in this work? And they're going to be so different. And I think it's just giving people a peek in of like, there's good things, there's bad things, but also you two are very different. So maybe your experiences are different. What have been the ups and the downs in this industry for you?
I think that, like, just not working freelance in this way of like not knowing when you'll work. Films are notoriously schedule shifty all the time. Like, a schedule is shifting. Oh shit, you need to be there tomorrow. We're moving this scene up that was happening 3 weeks from now. It's Monday. We're moving it up to Friday. And none of the prep work for this, not none, but like, you know, like, writers haven't been signed yet. Conversations haven't been had. They're bringing in new, you know, it's like there's an unpredictability about work. And there's also an unpredictability about schedule. If you're averse to that kind of like freelance unpredictability around like, you know, that type of thing, like it can be really complicated. And on top of that, film hours are long. And especially if you're shooting overnights, for example, and doing a few overnights in a row, like, it can really just, like, you know, mess with your scheduling and your life in a way. And so it's a very particular, you know, being in film production is a particular type of world in that way. And that's definitely a challenge. And I think just like, you know, in the dry times of like, you know, keeping up with people that you know and telling them that you're thinking about them, wondering if there's work, you know, like, just how all that whole like outreach thing about like staying top of people's mind, really doing a good job when you're on set, making a good impression, doing good work. I think these are all kind of parts of the job that are more challenging for me anyway. Those, for some people that work in the film industry, they're like, yeah, it's just my life. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. For me personally, that part is challenging. And the insecurity of like not knowing where the next job is coming from, I think, is always like, you know, makes me nervous personally. It's not nice to my nervous system.
Yeah. What about your ups? Why do you stay?
Number one, I love the art and the act of creation, I think, is really magical and beautiful. Working with different people, different artists, you know, there's no two sets I've ever been on have been even remotely similar. It's something that's, mm-hmm. you know, it might be an obvious thing to say, like every set is different. But in this work in particular, no scene is the same. No actors that you work with have the same boundaries. No director wants to see the same thing. Like, everything is different. And so it's really exciting. And like, you get to sort of hold the space for people and put this, help put these scenes together and contribute to creation. It hasn't been made yet, but like, you try and, you know, add a little bit more to the creation to make it better than it could have been without your presence there. And so to me, that's really exciting. I love, you know, I also make things. And so I love to see how other people make things. And I love to just, I know how much support one needs when they're creating something. And mm-hmm. to be there in that support role is fantastic. And the appreciation is nice too, for me, a person who likes compliments. you know, that appreciation of like, I don't understand what we did without you. Oh my God, you just made the most awkward thing so fun and comfortable. Just like, well, thank you.
Jack, what about you? The ups and the downs of this work for you?
There are two specific downs that I'm not really gonna like go super in detail with, but the first is more of like, I think it was one of my earlier experiences where there was just a lot of chaos with like what was discussed with the actor and then what was actually happening, and like, are, you know, they're not doing what they said they were going to do, and but like they're breaking their own boundary, and like I don't really know how to handle this. And just like the anxiety of like, in that particular, it wasn't the same scene, but it was the same show where there was like a director who just sort of like threw me in to work with the actors, which I was not expecting. It's not like I wasn't trained for it, but I wasn't expecting like it at this level for this director to be like, okay, go work with these actors and like figure it out. And I was like, okay. And so there was just like this anxiety of like, and I think sometimes I do think back on that moment and I'm not really sure how I would handle it differently, but I still think like, oh man, that couldn't have been the best experience for them, which kind of sucks. And you know, like how could I have been better in that moment is just something that like, I'm not really sure because no one was really doing what they said they were going to be doing. And so that was like, that was a moment. And then there was another one where there was like a certain level of actor that like, if I said their name, everyone would know. And I think that this person, like, to give them the benefit of the doubt, like, I don't want to say that their intention was to embarrass me, but they had sort of like called me into the room during this rehearsal and like sat me down before we were filming. And this is like after I'd already had this intake meeting with this person, and they were like, I don't know, I just felt like they were trying to embarrass me. Like, I don't need you. And like, what are you going to do if I do this kind of a thing? And it was in front of everyone, like camera was setting up, my hair and makeup was there, the other actor was there. And I also, in addition to have like being relatively new to this work, am a, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I kind of do look younger than I am. And I, and this person, yes. And this person I think was sort of like, I don't know. I just felt like I was made to feel embarrassed, even though I wasn't. I was like, I just didn't like this person after that. And so I haven't had that kind of experience since, but I do think that like in terms of the actors who feel like they've been doing this and they don't need an intimacy coordinator, that right. like there is this sense of like, what are you doing here? And I wasn't expecting that out of this person. And so I kind of was just like caught off guard, and just left a bad feeling in my mouth. So that was like, and these are just like very specific instances of like anxiety. Where I'm just like, I didn't like that. And I'm not really sure what impression that left on everyone else in the room. And so I think that in general, like what impression did I leave in this environment, in this role, is like big for me. Like I want to leave a good impression, and I want people to feel like I did my job well. And those are two instances where I'm not really sure that that's the impression that I left. Yeah. And in terms of the ups, honestly, I think like as much as I have loved working on TV and film, I think some of my favorite moments have been on stage. I've been lucky enough to be consistently working on stage since I started doing this. And there's a different need on stage. And I love working with actors to like figure it out. And there have been moments where I've been like, ooh, that's going to be good. And then I see it and I'm like, ooh, that's good. I did that. And like, got it. And, you know, and they're comfortable doing it. Like you can see these actors just like doing really good work and you being a part of it, like that's, I think, the high for me.
I love that. Is there a difference between being on like stage and then doing like television and movies? Is there a difference between the work that is done?
Yeah, yeah. It's a big difference.
Yes. What's the difference?
Oh yeah. So, you know, a lot of the principles are the same. I feel like consent practices, consent principles, there's a lot of stuff that's definitely overlaps. For performance, usually the performance is going to happen more than one time. Sometimes it could happen 100 times. I've certainly worked on shows that have had 100 performances. So there's different like systems and considerations that you want to put into place. There's also like, you know, masking techniques, barrier techniques, depends on where the audience is. Like, and when you're working on film, you're lining something up for a camera angle, you're going to be shooting it for anywhere from 2 to 9 hours, and then it's done, and you're likely not going to go back to it, though sometimes you do go back to it. If they have to reshoot something, that's definitely happened. But in general, you don't go back to it. And so there's different considerations for the liveness, the continued interaction between the people, having to repeat the scene over and over and over again every night and have it be safe. And then the, you know, there's certain boundary practices that you can put into place in performance like that, you know. I don't know if this is still a thing, but like, I remember like, you know, a while ago when I was first starting, it was like, you know, because one actor was allowed to touch someone on stage, they felt like they could go up to them in the dressing room and just give them a shoulder rub whenever they wanted to. And just like, yeah. So, you know, there's other things that we put into place just about like boundaries around bodies and stuff like that. So yeah, there's a lot of similarities and a lot of very big differences just because the mediums are so different.
Yeah, and a lot of times it depends. Like when you're working on film and television, usually you're working with like the actors that are involved in the moment, and you don't really like, they don't even really have too much interaction with some of the other characters in the show. And when you're on a production, a stage production, the actors are constantly together. It's usually like a company who is working mm-hmm. together, and they're all called to rehearsal, and they might not all be working on a scene, but they're all like in there watching each other. Sometimes they're not called, but like for the most part, if you are called within like a block of rehearsal in one night, you're pretty much there the whole time. And they sort of like watch each other and interact in a way that's like different than people may or may not interact when they're in a show or a movie together. Even though, like in my experience, even though I'm working with like certain actors in a scene, there has been a want for some of these practices to be established in sort of the culture of the company. I think that's been like the fundamental difference for me, mm-hmm. or that I've noticed, is like everyone is sort of like interested and involved and on board to like, you know, practice consent and boundaries when it's theater. Mm-hmm.
So say someone has listened to this whole, at this point, hour of us just chit-chatting and getting all in your business, and they're like, no, I want to do this. I like these ups. Those downs, I don't know. But those ups. Tell me more about Centima. How do I get in this? Like, where's the gate? How do I get in? How would they find us? I mean, I could tell them, but like, we could do it together. How would they find us? Who are we? Why would they even want to work with us? What does our program look like? Like, I'm not saying we're better than anyone because that's rude, but I will say that I think we bring a certain magic to this genre of work. So why would anyone want to work with us, and how would they work with us?
I mean, the first thing that you would do is you would go to Syntema.co and check out our website and see if there's a vibe. We offer our courses on demand, so you can sort of start whenever you want and take them at your own pace. We do biweekly AMAs where you get FaceTime with the three of us and you get to ask us any questions that you have. We bring up, you know, we do book clubs and all sorts of topics of conversation during our AMAs. And you can just ask any general questions about where you are in the course. And you get to also meet all the other people that you are in training with. And I really love all the people that we've brought in to instruct with us. Like, we've brought some really beautiful experts in their fields, from, you know, film study to, you know, to sexuality, to gender, to DEI and B, to disability. We just have a really beautiful group of instructors that work with us. And we really love our community as well. It's a really kind of a great community of people who are very passionate about the work. And some of them seasoned people from the film industry. Others are just, you know, coming in from adjacent fields. Somatic therapists, LMFTs, body workers, mm-hmm. people coming in from all over the place. And so we try and offer a very comprehensive education around the art and practice of intimacy coordination and all of the adjacent things that we feel like you need to know, from trauma awareness to nervous system regulation to the nuts and bolts of how to do the job to the choreography and masking and blah, blah, blah. The list is endless, and you can go on our website and learn more. And it's really easy. You can just sign up.
You got to pay, though. It's not for free. You got to have some coins.
You can just.
Usually when people get things for free, they don't want to do them anyway. So you wouldn't want it to be for free.
That's also very true. They're like, I'm busy. What? Like, what are you doing?
I think so. Our course is robust. Our course is very direct. Like, you know exactly what you're getting before you get it. You understand a timeline before you sign up. And so if you know that this is what you want and the vibe vibes, and we're the cool auntie, so it will probably vibe.
Thank you.
Then, you know, you can sign up whenever you want. If you are someone who is unsure for whatever reason, take your time, because there are a lot of variables. Like, we are not promising that people will get work. We're not that you like our course. We're not promising that we know everything, but we are bringing in the most knowledgeable people that we can find, and we are putting everything that we have into making sure that we are training people who are going to go on set and, like, you know, show up and leave that impression that we're looking for. So if you're unsure, take your time, because Syntema will be there when you're ready, and consider all of those factors. Like, don't make it something that you rush into or are doing without being sure, like, why you're doing it and that we're the people that you want to be doing it with.
Mm-hmm. Definitely check out.
There's also that. Go ahead.
No, no, you.
I'm going to fight you. I think there's also the idea in the conversation of bringing it back to, like, accessibility and community. The reason that we wanted to, yes, we wanted to make it easier on us on the front end, but in conversations in creating something that felt good to have our names on, right? Like our names are on this. We wanted to make sure that it was accessible. And so sure, you do have to have an internet connection, but you could do it from your phone. You could do it, go to the library, right? And we also wanted it to be on your time. There's something that's really special about having autonomy. And that is something that we really focus on here, and being able to do it on your own time, your own autonomy, is really important to us, as well as the community aspect. You know, the AMAs, you know, most of the time we try to be there, all of us, but life be life. And but there are opportunities to actually ask questions instead of just sitting and twiddling your thumbs like, well, maybe I'll send an email. Like, you get live time to actually like ask those questions, meet other people, which I think is also really important in this aspect of work, because community is important. I think, Jacqueline, you mentioned this work is who you know. Like, referrals are important. And sometimes, oftentimes, they come from inside the house. The calls come from inside the house, the community house. And so going to those AMAs, having the threads, and, you know, we're continuing to figure out what that looks like. But people come to the AMAs, they're like, oh, hey, how are you? And that's always cool. You're like, look at you knowing each other. Okay, maybe you're sliding each other's DMs. We don't know. But like, to see someone go, oh, you're also working on that. Cool. What are you doing? I think that that's so important that we have been able to do and continue to do, and we'll continue to learn what that looks like and ask questions to make it even better. So I think a cool part about Sentima is you get to do it on your own time. I've been a lifetime student, and teachers normally are like, it's due today, figure it out. But for us, it's like, you got school, you got kids, you have a family, you also have another career. Please, we want to meet you where you are. And if that's somewhere in a little bit of chaos, we got you. Or if it's someone that's like at the house every day, we got you. And so being able to also offer that in Sentima, I think, is really important.
Definitely. And I was going to add to that and say, you know, definitely if you're interested in this field of work, check out the other courses. Like, there's, you know, there's other schools, check them out and see who resonates with you. Because I think ultimately that is what's going to determine your success in the field, is who is studying with people that you resonate with.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other, I know the instructors of the other courses, they're also fantastic. And they're good people. So, you know, I think find the course that you feel like is like speaks to you and that's good for you. And if that's us, we would love to study with you. I mean, to, you know, to train you, to learn with you, to train you.
Hand in hand, together. What are you looking forward to in this industry? I know you kind of touched on a little bit, but it is new. What are you looking forward to? What are your hopes and dreams in this industry? What do you hope blooms?
I don't know if I have like a shareable answer to that.
Ooh, it's a secret. I love secrets. Text it to me.
I think you guys know. And like, I think it's hard to like have a business and not hope that like, not have like the hopes of an industry braided into the hopes of like the business that your industry is in, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, you know, there's some things like internally we all know that we want to get to, and, you know, the hope is that this is a thriving part of the entertainment industry. I actually, you know, I will say in lieu of what Yehuda just said in terms of like the other instructors, I would love for there to be like just more collaboration, you know, like I would love for everyone to just sort of like let down our own barriers and to some extent like practice what we preach, kind of a thing.
Respect.
Yeah. Well, I'm part of the leadership committee at SAG-AFTRA for the intimacy coordinators, and it feels really great. You know, like I'm really hopeful for our entrance into possibly into the union. I think that that would be fantastic. It seems like there's already inroads there. And that that's a discussion that's being had kind of above our access level, but those are discussions that have that are happening. I would love to, instead of being brought on after the fact or after something's written, you know, or like, oh shit, we need you next week, like to really be brought on early to like really map out intimate scenes and like, you know, really get in there with creatives and be a creative collaborator when it comes to these and plan them out with the same level of intensity that a stunt would be planned. And with as much in advance. And so those times when we have, when I have had, you know, a lot of creative input, it's really satisfying and it's really fun. And so I think to be more involved in the collaborative act of creation with artists, I think is that that's something that I'm super looking forward to more of.
I love that. This has been so fun. I did learn new things about both of you, so that's always my goal. So let's get to the last question of the show. This is where I really shine in my nosy bag. What is the wildest thing that someone has texted or DM'd you in the last 2 weeks? And wild is relative to whomever you are. It could be like something that wild is like warms your heart wild. It's a surprise. It was an oh shit. What is wild? What is the wildest thing someone has sent you or DM'd you in the last 2 weeks?
Well, I got a text from a number that I did not recognize today. And I am also a personal trainer. So I was like, is this some, is this like a client that I didn't save? Because I'm very selective with numbers being saved. Like there are plenty of numbers in my phone that do not have names. And I just rely on like the conversation to remember who it was. And this was like a new message. And I was like, who is this? And I almost didn't say anything, but I was like, I don't know. It could be someone I know. And I was like, wrong text, who dis? I don't think that's actually what I said, but I said something along those lines. But I'll read you the text exchange.
Was it weird?
It was just like weird. Yeah. Said, hi, my name is Felix. Do you remember me, ma'am? And honestly, because he said ma'am.
It's a scam.
And
it's
I call everyone ma'am. I was like, maybe it is somebody I know, because I call everybody ma'am. And I just deleted it. I was like, I can't talk to you. And you're like,
so you don't have a date with Felix? Is that what you're telling us?
No, because honestly, I did get a little bit excited. I was like, maybe it's an old fling and I'm a little crusty. So like, maybe this would be nice.
Well, you know, Jacqueline's phone line is open for old flings. That's not Felix. And when she's not crusty, apparently. Yehuda, what's going on over there in your phone?
All right. Well, it was my birthday last week.
It was.
I turned a big number. And
22.
Yeah.
50.
And I got so many texts from, like, I've had a lot of eras in my life, like just different worlds that I've lived in for a long time. And I got texts from people from like every epoch of my life. And some of them were wild. And people that I did not expect to hear from. And some funny remembrances of things that have happened in the past. Some ridiculous. And so I felt very loved on my birthday. It was really incredible, actually. And so I'm still kind of blown away and like scrolling through and, you know, taking it all in. People also sent me cards. I got like a lot of card, like physical cards to read. It's not texts, but they're a type of text, former format of texts.
OG.
And OG texts. And
well, Telegram.
It was amazing. It was really amazing. I'm still kind of blown away.
Damn,
by
we
it.
Should have sent a telegram next year.
So that was
Haven't caught my
really
pigeon.
wild.
You didn't get Jacqueline's pigeon. Did it get lost?
Your carrier pigeon. The note, a little scroll attached to its foot.
Imagine. Oh, okay, this is about to get weird. We talk about pigeons now. Next up, peasants. So we're gonna go ahead and wrap it up here. Where can the individuals find you, find us, tell us what you would like to share?
#sentiment.co on Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads,
Ooh.
Yeah,
sentiment.co on the
sentiment.co.
www.
On Instagram, everywhere, it's just sentiment.co. And that's where you can
Yeah.
find us. And then from there,
You can't miss that.
you can find us individually from there.